Russ's Tool Shed.
Hello, Tampa! So welcome to episode 4 of It's All About the Tools. We have a star-studded cast here for this show. It's going to be a really great night here in Tampa, live from the Microsoft office, a beautiful facility here, sitting right on Tampa Bay. We have Bill Reese over here for MVP for Silverlight. Give it up for Bill. He's going to be joining us today.
Yeah, I'm Bill Reese out of Tampa. I'm a Silverlight MVP. I do a lot with Silverlight game development, and I'm really excited to be here.
All right, cool. Thanks a lot, Bill. And also, we have another MVP here, Nikita, on my right. Nikita, give it up for Nikita.
I'm Nikita Polikoff. I'm Device Application Developer MVP. It's a mouthful. It means I develop for Windows Mobile applications. I'm a Tampa MVP, and I'm here today.
All right, great. Thanks a lot. Round of applause, Nikita. And we have, of course, Mr. Keith Kobza. He's heads up the Tampa Bay .NET user group here. He's been really instrumental in the community and keeping this going. And yeah, just an awesome guy.
I'm also from the Tampa Bay area. Like you said, I'm a unified communications server, MVP. So I'm the guy that builds applications for instant messaging, IVR applications, speech server, all that neat stuff. I also run the .NET user group, like you said.
That's cool. Give it up for Keith Kobza, MVP. Man, last but not least, this is my co-host, Mr. Stan Schultes. Big round of applause for Stan.
You can tell because I'm wearing a hat, too.
That's it.
So Stan Schultes, I'm from Sarasota, Florida. I run the Sarasota Dev Group down there, and I'm a VB MVP.
All right. Lots of great content ahead, and one more time, big round of applause for everybody. We'll have them all back up later. Thank you very much. As usual, my trusty right-hand man here on my left side is Stan Schultes. We have a little bit more information about our co-host. He's been a phenomenal speaker, and I can't tell you how thankful, Stan, I am for all the work you put into this effort. He's always contributing, writing all sorts of content. You can see his website there, vbnetexpert.com, and done a ton of webcasts as well as a lot of presentations at a lot of the code camps. Also, you recently wrote chapters in a book.
I co-wrote a book, .NET Nuke, Professional .NET Nuke, Rock's book. I wrote the module dev chapters in that. So right. I'm a big fan of .NET Nuke.
So what we're talking about here tonight is there's got to be a better way. We're talking about development tools, and that's what this show is about. It's about raising the level of awareness of these tools as well as resources, right, which is equally as important on how to find out about these tools and how to know find out about developer events that are going on. So what we have here are the challenges that we are going to be talking about here tonight. I've done a lot of rendering lately and encoding lately, especially with this Toolshed TV show. And I'm telling you, it was a very painful process to go through. Number one, it takes forever to render something that's an hour long, playtime. And secondly, it was a lot of hit and miss. So anybody that is doing any kind of video work, you know, you kind of share this pain. You know, you got your high-def file, you're ready to go, and then you go to throw it on the internet, and boom, it chunks down, and it's chunky, and it stops, and it buffers. And
people who do that are professionals, and they don't want to share their tips and tricks. You know,
Well, that's what this show is about, man, sharing, right? Sharing tips and tricks. One here is my browser-based blog postings tool. It's just clunky and difficult to use, There's got to be an easier way. I can't tell you, when I first started doing blogging, I had a tool that it was just horrendous. I ended up doing copy and paste from another tool into that one to get it to format and look the way I wanted to. Then, we're talking about mobility programming. And anybody right here want to just get out your cell phone and hold it up for me? All right, I see a good number of Windows mobile devices out mm-hmm. there, and it looks like everybody's got a freaking different phone in this audience right here. All right, so that's good. Now, how do you program to all those different types of devices? And how about devices that haven't even come out yet? How about ones that have maybe 6.5, Windows 6.5 on it? Are you tired of wiring up your code, event handlers, right, in your Silverlight or WPF applications? It's a painful thing to keep having to write that code that is just grunt work, basically. And let's go ahead and get started. So this particular challenge we're going to be talking about in this segment of the show is about encoding and taking a WMV file, which may have been created in its pristine state for maybe to be published on a DVD, perhaps, with a really high bit rate, and see what you can do to get that to stream over the internet in a very smooth way, as well as a whole bunch of other new features that have just come out with Expression Encoder 3. So what is it? Expression Encoder 3 provides the power of industry-leading encoding in an easy, approachable interface, and it really is easy. There's a lot of new enhancements in Encoder that make encoding a breeze. When I first started using Encoder 2, I was like a deer in headlights. Honest to God, I was looking at all the different options that are available, and I'm like, man, I've got a ton to learn here in order to start doing any kind of video work. Just out of curiosity, how many people here are doing website development? Show of hands. And how many people here are also looking to do videos on your website? This is becoming more and more popular. You can see about, 60% of the audience here today.
I was going to say more like 80%.
Pretty
high proportion.
It's right up there. And so this is very applicable to the challenges that you may be facing right now in doing some of your video work online. I know more and more websites I go to and I visit, there are videos there. And it's a great way. They say, a picture is worth a million words, 1,000 words?
At least 1,000.
At least 1,000. And with videos are worth a million, right? Pictures are worth 1,000, videos are worth a million, right?
They really are, too.
And we have a lot of good sites with a lot of great content that's being populated daily now. So let's go out to the website. First of all, take a look at the Microsoft.com/expression/try-it. And what we see here is Expression Studio 3 right up in top. You can go ahead and download the trial version right now today when you get home, as well as the pieces that are part of it, the Expression Web, Expression Blend 3 with Sketchflow. We did a demo on Sketchflow in the last episode mm-hmm. of It's All About the Tools. And you can see right away over in the right-hand corner there, the top three features, encoding for everyone, right? So you can generate BC1 or H.264 streams, and basically that is WMV files or MP4 files, okay, is the end result there. And wrap it around in a Silverlight experience, okay? And the personalized media, there's some lot of nice editing enhancements. We'll show you some of those. One I'm really excited about is a screen capture. So you can actually capture both still and animated screens on your desktop while you're using the screen capture program. So let's go ahead and get right to it, and we can bring up Expression Encoder. So here we come, and first thing we'll do here is show off the screen capture piece of the product, right? So we've got a lot of things to show you here on Encoder. We're going to cover all those highlighted items that we just saw on the website, the first of which is the screen capture. So let's go ahead and do it. I'm going to bring up the screen capture utility by clicking on the button. Let's go take a look at some of these properties. You can see I've got a video camera here, cam camera. There it is. Hi, everybody. How you doing? Okay, so that's our camera options. You also have screen resolution settings. You got some audio settings as well. You got your various hotkeys for starting and stopping the screen capture, and some other settings and beeping and flashing and all that kind of stuff. This is an important tip too. for any screen capture utility that you. I'm actually writing my temporary files out to my little USB drive. Okay, I'm keeping it away from my main hard drive because that's going to have additional I/O going on the hard drive. So it's actually more performant to write your temporary files out to another drive. So that's a little tip for you here from the tool shed. Actually, Carl Franklin told me about that tip in our first episode that we did.
Carl has been so helpful in all these shows.
Just tremendous. And he still does the final touches on the audio for me in every show as well. What we do is we'll go ahead and press the record button and go to the full screen. Go ahead and hit record and then hit OK here. And now it's got the countdown 3, 2, 1, and we are now recording. So let's go ahead and open up and import a video. And let's go ahead and put in, there's a nice little a wildlife video here. And we can go ahead and play this once it comes in. Okay, so I'm just going to go ahead and play this here. And we can see we are actually recording a video on top of a video. All right, this is what we're doing here. And a few other things we could do is under the tools, you got some options here. And you can see you've got the expression light and dark settings. I think the default, is dark when it comes up. I kind of like the light setting. So let's go ahead and use that. And then we'll go ahead and close this up, and let's go ahead and make our changes. So I'll go ahead and do the Control Shift F12 to go ahead and stop our recording. So now it'll go out and bring up our viewer. And once we have this viewer, what we see here is you can go ahead and play this. Right there, or you can get rid of it if you don't like it. You can go ahead and save the screen capture and then go ahead and start capturing another. Another one here is go full screen, and the one I really like is bring up Expression Encoder with everything that you've already done. And so we'll go ahead and do that, and first it'll prompt you to save it. And once you've saved it, Expression Encoder will go ahead and launch, and now you'll not only see the video clip, but also the camcorder, the webcam that I have on my machine down in the lower right. And so if we go ahead and just press play here, we'll go ahead and start this. And I have in my notes here to applause at this point. What do you think of that, huh? Well, I'm telling you, this solves a lot of problems, right? Those of you that are in training or those of you who do presentations, this is an invaluable new feature of Expression Encoder 3.
So you don't have to have a separate tool then to do screencast.
Anymore. It's built right in, built man. Right in. All right, so the next part I want to talk about, I'm going to bring back up Encoder. Take a look at some of the editing enhancements as well. And when this comes up, we'll go ahead and import a video that I have here, which is the intro from episode 1, Stan. I sliced that out here for this demo here today.
It's amazing what you can do with technology.
Mm-hmm. And let's just go out and play this through. You gotta love that song, don't you? I tell you, it's just great. And once this comes up, I'm gonna start putting in some edit points. All right, so I'm gonna do it. Edit right there, and this is the button to do that. If I hover over the top of it, you can see it's going to edit at the playhead. I'm going to do a couple more of these. We'll do one right here, and we'll do another one, say, right here. And the thing I want to point out now is over on the Clips tab, you can see each one of those clips that I just did an edit point at. And if you click on any one of these, it brings the playhead right to that spot on the line.
They're like bookmarks then.
Exactly, yep. And if you want to add piece at the start of your video, another video there, you can click on the add source to the start. You can also right mouse click on this timeline. You can add source at the end. Let's go ahead and do that. I'm going to add source at the end. And let's go ahead and pick up, say, the butterfly video. And now we got both of those appearing in the right. And there's a brand new feature as well. If I go to the start of that butterfly video, you'll notice there's a new button here that you've never seen before, which is insert a video between those two. So this is a new feature in Encoder 3. And let's go ahead and do that, and then we'll go ahead and put in our ever popular, and we'll just do the wildlife video here, all right, and throw that in. So now I've basically got all three videos in my clip line, on my play line here, and then you can juggle these around. So you could say, okay, let's make this first clip on the tool shed actually the one in the middle. So you hit the down arrow, and now it automatically changes those right in your editor. So some great stuff. So next up here, we've got some of our basic editing done. Let's go ahead then and start showing you a little bit more in terms of overlays. Like we saw that overlay of the video, right, of the webcam on the first one. How do you go about doing that manually if you want to go ahead and insert an overlay? So let's go ahead and do that. I'm going to go ahead and get rid of a few of these things here. And get rid of that one. And let's go ahead and we got the wildlife up here in the beginning. And oh, by the way, when this is playing, if you hit this button here with the little bar next to it, that will advance one frame at a time. All right. And so you can kind of get precise location with that one. And so with the video overlay, what we'll do is we'll go over to the enhance area. And I'm going to go right back to the beginning here with our wildlife video for this. And under Enhance, you'll see an area here for visual overlay. So simply add a visual overlay. Now, the portion of the video clip that I'm on is the wildlife video, and I'm actually going to do an overlay with the wildlife video. Before I do that, I'm just going to put an edit point into the wildlife video here and expand this out a little bit. I'm going to go like right about here toward the beginning, maybe right there, and I'm going to do a an edit. I'm going to go just a little bit further. I'm going to do an edit. One of the other things you can do is you can move over the top of that piece and then go ahead and delete that one piece. So now it's going to kind of go right from the horses riding, you know, into, you know, the birds flying shortly after that, okay? What I'm going to do then is I'm going to add an overlay to this application. Basically, it's, same, it's going to be the same video, and I'm doing this for a couple reasons. One is to show you that the original WMV file is untouched. All right, so everything we're doing here is separate from the original source, so you're not destroying or changing the source whatsoever. So, and then the second, of course, is you're going to actually see the timing differences between the two videos because they did some editing to the first one. So now, if I go ahead and play this through, you know, just like that, I mean, you got yourself an overlay. Now you'll see the synchronization is off a little bit, right? You'll start seeing the other animals in the big picture first and then seeing them second in the second picture.
Because you took that little piece out of the middle.
That's right. Yeah. That's right.
Nice.
And also, you have a volume control, right? So right now, the insert is set to zero on the overlay. But if you wanted the sound from that clip to come up, you can go ahead and increase that as well. Similarly, you can go ahead and add in a audio overlay. So let me go back over to clips. I'm going to go ahead and get rid of this overlay. I'm going to start with the tool shed video right here. And let's go to the enhance. We're going to go ahead and get rid of that that overlay. And let's go ahead and do a audio overlay next. So I'm going to go ahead and bring in the audio. What other song would I pick than the tool shed theme song? The overlay here at the beginning of this, and we can go ahead and press the play button. And now you can see the volume indicator. We'll pump this up a little bit when it starts. Number 5. So now you can hear it a little bit louder, and you can also see the green line. You can also see the green line added in for the audio overlay. So some really nice editing features. The last one I'll just point out in the pre-processing, and this is new, you can do volume leveling across your video. So do a pre-process the entire suite and kind of level out that the volume, and that's a brand new feature as well in Encoder 3 on the editing. How about that? Pretty nice, folks.
But I got to say, the Encoder 3 has really come a long ways from what I've seen in the past.
Man, it's
hustling right along.
And it's getting better. You know, wait till we get to presets, Dan. You're going to love the presets piece. I mean, that's going to be at the end.
These are okay? These are all features that you're using when you're editing the videos that that we're creating for the tool shed.
Absolutely. I'm going to be using this more and more now when I'm putting all these shows together. So some additional nice capabilities is the smooth streaming. And smooth streaming is the Microsoft implementation of the adaptive streaming technology. And that's available as well now with Encoder. So you'll see in some of the profiles when I bring them up in a little bit, there are some special streaming profiles. And basically what that allows the Silverlight client to do is detect what the bandwidth is that the end user is receiving the video at, and it will go ahead and automatically adjust the throughput rate according to the bandwidth that's available. So that's really nice, and you don't have to worry about, you know, what size am I going to have this thing going over the wire. It'll automatically adjust it. Of course, you do need to have, for Microsoft's implementation of that technology, Windows Server 2008 to stream it along with IIS 7. All right, so there are some new Silverlight templates as well that have come through with the Encoder 3, the Silverlight 3 templates, to be specific. And these are really great templates. So let's go ahead and bring in a video, right? We're going to go ahead and do a new job here. Let's go ahead and bring in a video. I mean, the one I'm going to bring in, Stan, for this is our SkyDrive tooltip from episode 1. And it's only about 2 minutes long. And if I bring up the properties here, you could see it's about a 22 meg file in the state that I created. Now I use Vegas Pro editing to pull all my multiple camera angles together and do my editing, and then I render it with that. But from that point forward, I have to do some additional work to get this to stream the way I want it to stream on the internet through Silverlight players, for example. And that's about what I'm going to show you right now, the additional touches. Because when I first started doing this on the Channel 9 videos, I was very frustrated because here I did all this hard work of doing a high-def, you know, quality production because I'm, you know, tired of seeing videos that are like blurry, you know, on the internet. You know, we have the technologies for making these look really sharp and crisp
it looked
and
great.
Clean.
It looked great when it was a postage stamp size.
That's right.
But then when you blew it up to full screen, it was all grainy.
Yeah, it was. And so that's what we're going to show you now. You know, we'll get into some of the encoding pieces. But first, what I want to do is show you some of the templates, right, that we got. So we'll go ahead and open this one up. And all I'm going to do is a couple things here. All right, I'm going to go over to the Output tab, and you have some thumbnail options, Best Frame, which is the first non-black frame to go ahead and create your thumbnail for the thing, or the first frame, or you have a custom choice there as well. But the thing I want to show you is the templates, right? So if you go down toward the bottom here, you can see you've got the Silverlight Gallery, you've got the default player. We're going to look at the default player here today. And in the preview is actually a working model. And there's the pause play button. You can see it pause and play. And all these buttons actually work in the little preview, which is, I thought was kind of neat. And then you have an output directory specified where you're going to dump the job to once you do your encode. The only change I made to the default settings on this, I'm going to make it right here now, is under the bitrate. Instead of the size being custom or quarter, I'm going to go map it to the same size I had as my original source. So I rendered it as 1280 by 720. And so you can see that come up. But everything else here is the defaults, right, that has come up with this encoder. I've got a constant bitrate setting here on the video up on top. And now I would normally go ahead and just hit the encode button. And then it'll go ahead and encode and then play up through the player. But rather than to you know, spend several minutes waiting for it to code, you know, encode, I have a Julia Child's approach here, and I'm going to go ahead and open up a job I did on Sunday night.
I smell something cooking.
You do, huh? Okay. And all I'm going to do now is press the encode button. This has the same settings, right, that we just did. And now, because I've already encoded it once, it's just going to go ahead and bring up the player. All right, so it'll save us a little bit of time. The player is phenomenal. What you can see here is you got the full screen playback, right? So if I let the mouse go, this little thing will just go out the full screen. As soon as you move the mouse back in, you get the controls. There's an option here for closed caption hearing. You also have, this is incredible, Stan. Look at this one, make player offline. Hmm. Oh, baby. Finally, we got an offline solution, right, for Silverlight through the use of this player. And then the last one here is show player in a separate window. So I can hit this, and I'll go ahead and start that video up in its own little player. And here it comes up. next up, we have... and there you see the player in its nature environment. So there are several enhancements in this. And of course, to end this thing with the icing on the cake, let me just go ahead and bring up my Explorer here and go out to our library that I created up on Sunday. This is the project right here. And take a look at that file size. You can see it right there, 11 meg. Right, so it reduced 50% without me, you know, busting a sweat whatsoever. And I had constant bit rate on there, not even variable. I might even see some additional with variable bit rate encoding as well. So you can start playing with these a little bit. But the thing I like is the default settings. In this case, you may, you know, have different, you know, results on your videos that you do. But I started out with one that was encoded for like a high def DVD that you would make. And this basically what it did was it throttled down. You know, I dug a little deeper and I found out what it really did for me. It throttled back the bit rates. Right, it didn't need to have that high of a bit rate level being streamed through Silverlight. It automatically throttled it back, and it didn't lose any clarity. You know, so now it will play smooth, and my problem is solved.
So let me get this. So you decreased the file size almost in half, but you didn't lose any clarity.
Well, it's an improved experience, that's for sure, because the user is not going to be experiencing all that buffering going on. You know, it's going to smooth out a lot cheaper. Yes, we have a question in front here.
So when I'm watching Netflix on my laptop, or if I'm just not watching it full screen on my big screen, the experience is much different than when I go full screen. So I'd like to improve upon that experience. I know that Netflix is also a Silverlight user.
Yeah, exactly. And that's really what some of the presets I'm going to show you next. It's a good lead in to let you do that. And we'll take a look at all the different preset options on the different encoding experiences for the different devices and different views. And so I should give you some money for that because that's a really good lead in there. So pay a dollar out of my pocket for that one, right, Stan?
So I think that we saw some evidence of that when we were re-encoding some of the earlier shows. We actually got a much better experience when you pulled it to full screen. You know, at first we got really grainy looking video, but then you re-encoded it and it improved it dramatically.
Yeah.
And also solved the buffering issues by having a smaller file size to deliver.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And I think the file size is different, and then also there's you know, the buffering. You know, how far ahead is it buffering? And some of the Silverlight players real nice. You see that buffering line. And when that buffering line is way ahead of the play line, that's a good thing, right? So, because that means it's already downloaded and it's just playing straight through. So that's really what your goal is, right, when you go ahead and stream these. All right, so the final piece to this demo, I'm just excited about this because this, I think, is what makes it a lot easier, is the presets up here on top. You can see what you have here are several different groupings. Now, as I indicated once before, when I first started using Encoder 2, and I went in there, I was completely lost because I had no idea what, you know, the differences were between CBR and VBR and then the buffer window and the frame rate. And it's a painful thing to try to figure out each one of these and see what the end result is because it takes a long time to build each one. It's not like an instantaneous feedback thing. You got to try it, you got to render it, you got to see what it looks like. And I think the presets will help this immensely, Stan, in coming up with a good initial set of settings. You can always go in and tweak and tune it, right, once you have it. But the goal of the presets is to give you a nice set of settings, for lack of a better word, that you are initially presented with, depending on how you want to encode. For example, I'll drill down here. We're going to take a look at the encoding for devices. If I go out to the MP4, now you can see some different devices there, those ones that begin with the letter I, and these other ones here that are Zune. Then you got a Zune high def as well. And so if you go ahead and select one of these and press apply, now you see all the changes made right down below to apply that particular piece of technology. The other thing that we could do here is kind of use a speed search right up on top. I can do maybe streaming, all right, if you're interested in doing some streaming. So these are all the ones that have streaming in it. Typically, when we do these desktop recording stand or screencasts, you're typically in 1024x768. So I could type in screen, and now all the ones that have the screen setting come up. So here's the one for VC1 screen encoding, and if you hover over the top of these, you can actually see the path that kind of got drilled down for you automatically, encoding Silverlight, that said VC1 variable bit rate, VC1 screen encoding, and if you look at the size on the outputs on there, sure enough, it's 1024x768. The presets, I think, alone is a huge improvement, you know, over, you know, usability with the prior release of this, and something I'm really excited about. So what do you think? One other thing, Bill, you got to mention or add on that?
Yeah, so some of the new templates that are in there, they're all built on top of Silverlight 3. And so they're using the C# and the Zap format for the player. The other thing that you get out of that is that the new hardware acceleration that's built into Silverlight 3, you get to take advantage of that for video, especially when you're going full screen. You're going to be using a lot less CPU to actually run the video and play back the video because it's taking advantage of the hardware.
So we've got a community event here. Thank you very much, Bill, for providing that additional insight. Also, one other thing I did want to mention is the Silverlight skins or players that you see here are editable in Expression Blend. So they're just all XAML-based, so you can go ahead and tweak those and you know, make your own custom skins if you want to as well for players. And so we've got complete flexibility there as well.
And the application itself is WPF-based now, isn't it?
Yep,
yeah, and that's
right.
That's why you get the live preview and the little tool windows and things, because it's actually showing you actual video down there.
So out of curiosity, how many are going to go download Expression Encoder here when they get home? Show of hands. All right, thank you very much for that demo. Appreciate that.
All right, so we're going to move on to the next tool. The pain point on this one is that my browser-based blog posting tools are often clunky and difficult to use. If you've ever used some sort of an online portal or you're posting to a blog online, you know, through your browser, it's difficult to edit the text out there and make it look the way you want it to look. You know, you really want kind of a Word experience rather than a web browser experience, right? So we're going to take a look at a tool called Windows Live Writer that addresses that problem. Now, Windows Live Writer is really awesome, and I'll show you the drop-down list when I get into the demo of all the things that it supports. But basically, it's a free web content composition tool, as I call it. In other words, it's useful for blogging, but it's also useful for creating content in other, like in web portals and so on. It's not just a blogging tool. It's used for creating any kind of content you want to put out there. Very, very easy to use. It's a desktop tool. It's not a web browser-based tool. It's a free download. Comes from the Windows Live site, same place that things like Messenger and Live Mail come from. So there it is, download.live.com/writer, and you can pick up the other live tools while you're there.
Out of curiosity, how many people are using Live Writer right now? Show of hands, a few of you that do blogging. Okay, very good.
Yeah, all right. It's a great tool. So you can easily include images through cut and paste right into your page from capture tools like Snagit, Windows Snipping Tool, those things. It's compatible with a wide range of blog and content management tools. You can use this as a content provider for your own applications, too, through an SDK. So when the web installer, it always gets you the latest version through a set of auto updates. So you're always going to be notified when there's something else coming along. And basically, there's a save to draft and a publish option that I'll show you directly here. So what I want to do to begin with, then, is to take a look at what the experience is when you actually post to a blog. And I'm pointing at my blog right now. This is my DevMean blog, and you, so June 19th. I don't actually blog very often, so how about we put something up there right now? You know, that might be a nice thing. So this is what the blog looks like, and the first thing I'll do is I'll switch over to Live Writer. This is the Live Writer window, and you can see that it's matching the theme that I've got on my DevMean blog. So it's able to, when you register it, it's able to go out and query the site and pull back a style so that it looks the same in the edit window as you see inside. When you actually get it posted out there. So in my drafts, I've got a post that I've got in process here. I'm a VB, okay, so that's a little video segments that they're doing for MVPs, and I'm just going to put a little post out there. So you can see I've already got a hyperlink on something here. All right, so I'm just going to type Control K, or I can actually go in here to the insert menu and drop it down and paste in my hyperlink. And there's a couple options here. I can open the link in a new window directly, and it remembers the setting that you use, so you can use it the next time. And there's some advanced features as well. So I'm going to insert a hyperlink here.
So it's very Word-like, it looks like.
Yeah, like I said, yeah. It's sort of like, you know, Word for the web. Now, okay, so what I'm going to do is insert an image here. And I'm going to take it right off my disk, grab it. It's the I'm a VB picture, all right? So now I've got this image open, and over on the right-hand side in the picture bar, you can see that I can do some things to this image. One of them is that by default it's an inline text wrapping. Well, I'm going to stick it to the right, okay? And I'm actually going to take this guy and I'm going to drag it right up to the top of my content. All right, so that it actually ends up wrapped into my text. All right, so it's just a drag and drop operation to do that. Now, if you were trying to, you know, who can write the HTML to do that? Okay, so there's a few people here, but why do you have to know that, right? You just want a tool that you can drag and drop and make it do things. Okay, so as I mentioned, there's a save draft. If I want to just save a copy of it locally and work on it offline, I can do that, or I can actually just post it out to my site as soon as I'm ready. So I'm going to click publish. Oh, what I'm going to do, create a category for it, of course, before I post
it. Oh, the tags too, yeah.
Yeah, so I want this to be a developer topic, okay? So I picked developer, and now I'm going to click publish. And I did, and that is an option to notify me that I haven't picked a category before I post it, because I always forget to do that.
Yeah, me too, all the time. I'm telling you.
And I can click the box here to view it in the browser after publishing. So hopefully once it gets published out through the web interface here, once it gets done posting it out, it will pop it open and we'll be able to take a look at that post live on my blog.
You know what amazed me, Stan, is how easy it was to set up. It just went through and it picked up all the default settings and it just works. So,
all right, there it is. It's right live on my blog.
How about that?
Now, so that's really the experience that I'm talking about with wanting to be, you know, very word-like for posting up. You know, this is not a web-based browser tool. You know, it's much more capable than that. All right, so posting to a blog's pretty easy when you already have things set up to do it. All right, what does it take actually to set something up like that? That's actually turns out to be pretty easy too. So, you know, I had my blog chosen over here, but if I go to the tools, maybe it's right here. Yeah. So if I want to add a blog account, okay. So which blog service do you use? Not surprisingly, Windows Live Spaces and SharePoint are right on top. In this case, and it in fact offers to create me a blog if I want. I'm going to pick other blogging service in this case and click next. So type in my web address. In fact, I'm going to be demoing here with a local portal that I've got. So I'm going to localhost, it's all about the tools, and type in my username for this portal, and I can tell it to remember my password if I want.
So where are you going with this demo, Stan, is you're using this now to do content publishing?
Yes. So this isn't necessarily blog-based, but what I'm going to do is actually use it to post content to a website that I've got set up. So here's the select blog type. And from this list, you can see that there's quite a number of, now, it's primarily blog-oriented. So you see WordPress, Blogger, Atom, Protocol, you know, TypePad, and so on. There's a whole bunch of them here in the list. But there's a couple of APIs as well, the MetaWeblog API and the Movable Type API, which are probably the two most common ones out there. So I'm going to use the MetaWeblog API in this case, because what I'm going to do is post to .NET Nuke, okay, as a portal. And I'm going to pop back over to my setup here, and you can see that I've got a piece of text already highlighted, and this is the URL, my remote posting URL for the blog. Now you're going to have to look this up, you know, for the whatever given service that you're posting to, you know, to find out what the proper string is. But you can see that in here it's metapost.ashx with a key of expandable text HTML, and then at the very end it actually gives the ID of the module that I'm posting to. All right, that happens to be the sort of the protocol for how you post to this expandable HTML module on a .NET Nuke portal. Every application that you want to post to, it's got its own little unique way of doing it, so you have to look at the documentation for that. So once I know what that remote posting tool is, I can click Next. And it's actually going to go out and say, now, do you want it to detect the theme of your blog? And this is where it can come back and give you this nice, pretty picture that you're going to post into. If I say yes here, it'll go out and it'll interrogate my site and figure out what that information looks like. And once I'm done with that, when I click OK, it actually creates me a link out to that particular piece of content that I can post to. So I'm going to say no here because I've actually already got a link set up to this. And I'm just going to drop down to, it's all about the tools, expandable HTML. So I'm changing what I'm posting to. Okay. Now let me hop over to my browser and switch over to that site. All right, so this is actually a .NET Nuke portal that I've got a little bit of information set up on.
I like that logo you got there. That's
you like
nice.
That? Yeah. I thought you might like that, Russ. Nice little surprise for you.
Yeah.
So this is a very simple site. It's just got a page, a single page. And this is the module down here that I'm interested in, this developer community events module down at the lower right-hand side here. And you can see I've already got a couple of items out there. So it's all about the tools. You see a nice little jQuery effect when you click on the expandability here. So basically, I've got a couple of events that I've already posted out here. This isn't a blog. This is a basically a an information container into which you can put stuff. Okay, and I'm going to use LiveWriter then to post to that. All right, because this MetaWeblog API through a provider in .NET Nuke is able to post out to the blog module, the forums, the expandable text, the HTML. And this expandable text module, by the way, is put out by Mitchell Sellers, who's a guy that out in the .NET Nuke community. And the MetaWeblog API interface is by another fellow in the .NET Nuke community as well, by the name of Dave Worley with IT Crossing. All right, so he's put that out. There's a free one out there if you use .NET Nuke. So let's see how I can actually put some content into there. Go back to LiveWriter. And what I'm going to do then is click the new button, and you can see that I can either enter a new post or a new page. A post is actually the top section that's sort of the description about what's in that module, and a new page is each of those items that expands. Okay, so again, every provider that you post to will have a little bit different protocol for how this works, and this just happens to be the way that the expandable text HTML works. So I'm going to ask for a new page here. And it gives me a place to put a page title, and I'm going to say, this is some developer content. This isn't really meant to be a big live post, so something interesting goes here. And in a lot of cases, actually, what I meant to show you while I was still on the portal page, in fact, was the experience that you get over here. If you're trying to post some content out, all right, let me log in. I'll come right back to LiveWriter in a second. And if I were to manually post some information out to this item, okay, I can come down here and click the Add Content link, and I could do a very similar thing to what we were just looking at, where I get a header section. It's a rich text editor that we've got here. So, here's some content. Actually, this is the header. And then down below is the actual detail information. And if I want to put an image in here, I can click the image icon. And it gives me this image properties page. I can go out and browse to the server.
It's kind of cumbersome, huh?
Well, yeah. You almost have to know in advance that you want to put an image out here.
Yeah.
All right. So, what if you're cut and pasting something off of a page? And it's not something that you've maybe already got out there. Click out to my images directory. I can pick one of these and, like put my MVP logo on here. I can modify a little bit what's in here. But basically the idea is you have to think ahead on here. If you want to put several images into the content, you have to already have them saved out onto the site. There's no way of bringing one in dynamically. All right, you got to think ahead, and this is the cumbersome part of doing it on the web. And then you have to upload the image to the portal, and you have to put it in the right directory, and go and pick it. Okay, so that's what I mean by it's kind of cumbersome. So instead of doing it that way, LiveWriter gives you this very nice ability to take your content that you're creating, as I've started to do here. Let me just hit enter, just for the fun of it. Let me hop over here, and just take a screenshot of what's right up here. All right, just to have something to post there. All right, so I'm grabbing it into Snagit, which is a popular tool that we may highlight in the future, and hop back over to LiveWriter, and I can just paste it straight in. Okay, since it's a desktop tool, I can do all the cut and paste stuff that I want.
A lot easier.
And type whatever I want after that. And again, if I have this image highlighted, there's a lot of things I can do to it. You've already seen the text wrapping. I can set margins on it. I can set borders, drop shadows, instant photos, a whole bunch of different effects on it here. Maybe I want to put a drop shadow won't work too well on that, but maybe reflection on it, okay? And on the advanced tab, I have a set of actions. I can rotate, contrast, crop, tilt. There's a bunch of effects that I can do to that image as long as I've got it right there. I can set the size of it. And another set of effects, if I go and add effects here, I can change, to like a sepia tone if I want, sort of a black and white looking effect, and ultimately affect the way that that particular item is put in. As well, I've got the ability to insert a number of other things down here. I can hyperlinks, pictures, photo albums, videos. Maybe I want to put a code snippet in there. All right, so I click the code snippet item, and what I'm going to do is go back out to my handy text editor here and go and grab a piece of code and paste it into this upper window. Okay, now I need to tell it that it's Visual Basic so that it knows how to properly format it. And I can turn the line numbers on and off. I can put the container on it or take it away. You know, the container basically gives you a scroll bar, you know, for your text. And when I say OK, it comes back actually formatted and wow. colorized for you on the website. Ooh, you know how hard it is to do that. You know, so that's an add-in. So let me just publish this then.
Question over there?
Yeah, okay. When you were on the other editor, I know you had to have your images in a certain folder.
Yeah.
Yes. Where does this put your images?
Okay, so that's an excellent question. What you do when you configure the MetaWeblog module on .NET Nuke, you can tell it where you want the images to go. And typically it's in a subdirectory of the portals folder. Yeah, so what happens is when you post to the site, the images just go right onto the page and go straight down into that folder that you've specified. And you can define a set of folders that you can put them into as well. So you can organize all your content together. And it's actually by module. So we have another question. Go ahead.
I noticed that there was a provider or whatever for posting to a SharePoint blog. Can you post, you know, SharePoint for provide content providers use a similar type?
Like for a
rich
list?
Text editor, can you do that to
like
a SharePoint
for a list or something
site?
Like that?
Not necessarily a list, but to a content web page.
Yes.
So, yes. And SharePoint.
Yes. Yep. Works very nicely for that. So the last thing that I have to do before I post this to the page, and you might have noticed when I click publish, I got an error. All right, and the reason was because down here I didn't pick a page parent. So you can have multiple of these expandable text HTML modules in the portal, and I just have to pick which one it's going to post to. Now when I click publish, it's going to send it out to that particular page and then refresh it for me. So you'll see that right below, or maybe right in the middle, it depends on, I think I've got it set up to post them alphabetically in this case. Here we go. So it's already expanded, and you can see that it put my image straight out there. I didn't have to go and screw around with uploading it to the portal first. I can just paste it into Windows Live Writer and immediately do some content publishing that's really not blog based. All right. So that's a really handy function for, you know, posting content out to sites.
So Live Writer is not just for blogging.
Not just for blogging. And the best part really is that because there are these, like the MetaWeblog API, you can implement that in your own applications. As a developer, you can use Windows Live Writer to publish content into your own applications. It doesn't have to be on an online application for that matter. It can be any kind of an application you want to post into. So Live Writer is really awesome in terms of the way that it can be used for content publishing. So what do you all think about that?
Awesome, Stan. That is an awesome demo, man. That was you blew me away when you showed that me for the first time, and like, wow! I had no idea.
You know, I use Live Writer all the time, and I've gotten so I've set up we have an extranet portal at work,
yeah.
Where we're constantly putting FAQs about the product that we support out there, and the engineers who were doing it were going, man, this is so clunky. You know, why can't this be easier? And I showed them Live Writer, and they're really happy with me now. They just love. Now they love posting content out to the portal, whereas I used to have to twist their arm to get them to do it.
Oh, no, even regular blogging. I know I started increasing my blogging once I had an easier tool to use, right, to go ahead and do that.
Well,
so,
you can see I didn't increase my blogging.
Well, thanks once again. Give it up for Mr. Stan Schultes.
Thank you.
All right, so our next section of the show here, we got a very exciting topic and a very cool presenter. Man, look at the shirt he's wearing, man. This is great. Gotta love that. Where is that from? The South Florida Code Camp?
Yep.
You got that right. Well, that was a really good camp.
Definitely.
We're going to talk about mobility now. And, you know, a lot of times when you're creating applications and it's for mobile devices, it's challenging. A lot of times you might think to yourself, man, I need to have that physical device in order to test it out. Well, we're going to show a few different ways to solve some of that pain.
Yep.
And I know you're a mobility MVP. Is that correct,
yep.
Nikita?
Device application developer. So it's in the development side of Windows Mobile MVP.
In fact, here's a little bit more information about Nikita. He was actually formerly an ASP.NET MVP, so he got a very well-rounded experience, right, coming into
yep.
mobility. Nikita Polykov. .com. And then you got your site there, developer.windowsmobile.com. Also, you got some, you got a project up there on open source, a project up on CodePlex. And he's always doing presentations. Every time there's a code camp, you'll definitely see Nikita there doing presentations and helping out build that developer community. So I think we can give him a nice round of applause for those efforts. So, Nikita, I'll let you take it away.
Okay. So how many of you have smartphone devices, switch devices?
No hands.
Okay, that's a lot of you. All right, there's one version of smartphone devices called Windows Mobile. I think everybody's familiar with that. There's about 30 million of Windows Mobile, current Windows Mobile 6 and 6.1 devices out in the market right now. So I have something exciting to announce. There would actually be Windows Mobile Marketplace launching, and that's going to give you an opportunity to actually reach out to that market through an application that's built in on the phone. Also,
so what you're saying is I could build an app and publish it up there and make some money on it?
Absolutely. So you can make, you can provide a free application
okay,
or a paid application.
yep.
There's some more details on developer.windowsmobile.com where you can find out about registration. The site opens up and more details open up on Monday on how you can submit your applications. So what's actually going to happen is the next version of Windows Mobile, which is going to be Windows Mobile 6.5, will actually come pre-installed with this application right on the phone. And those devices are coming in fall. So you definitely want to make sure that if you're building mobile applications, that your mobile application is installed on that device. But question is, I mean, Russ, how are you going to test on the phone that's not even out on the OS, that's not even out on the phone right now?
I know, I got 6.1 on mine. I guess I'm out of luck, huh? I can't do any development.
Yeah, how can you test your current 6.1 applications? And how do you test all those different screen resolutions? Because they're gonna have VGA, they're gonna have wide VGA resolutions on those phones. And you know, that unless you're one of the lucky ones that has, there's only one more model that has one of those screens. You need to either get that phone, or how would you do it? So this is what we're gonna talk about today: is the tools that you actually already have in your Visual Studio Professional 2005 or 2008 today. So when Visual Studio 2008 came out, there was actually a time right around the switch of Windows Mobile 5 and Windows Mobile 6. So there's actually some tools that come with that if you install that.
And can you talk about some of these SDKs here that you have mentioned
yep.
in the download site?
Yep, definitely. So because there was only 6.0 version of the mobile SDK available with Visual Studio 2008 Professional, you do definitely want to make sure that you go ahead, go on the mobile site with the link there, msdn.com/Windows Mobile and download those the SDK from Windows Mobile 6.1. Actually, let me show you a little bit about what the site looks like. So you want to make sure you get the Windows Mobile 6, and there's also another one for 6.1 out of MSDN. And there's also Windows Mobile 6.5 Developer Toolkit. So as I mentioned, the first one is a software developer toolkit. It's an SDK. So it contains the emulator, which is analogous to a virtual PC for you to run different versions of Windows Mobile on your PC without actually having the device to test on. And we'll touch on that. The Windows Mobile 6.5 actually contains the new images for Windows Mobile 6.5 operating system and the emulators for all those different new screen resolutions and the actual OS for you to test your applications or your website, because it does come also with the new Pocket Internet Explorer version. So you get a few of those tools to actually tinker around with an OS that you can't even buy a phone for right now. That's coming in fall, where the store is launching on Monday. The site that I mentioned, developer.windowsmobile.com, this is going to be your new homepage for everything Windows Mobile centric that you want to go to download the SDK and also find out more about the marketplace. Microsoft is definitely going to have a contest day one here for your application. So it rolls out. You definitely want to have the first first whatever application in those categories. So
cutting edge
yep.
Here on the tool shed.
Yep. So how do you get started? Let's look at Visual Studio right away. So when you install Visual Studio, install one of those SDKs, where do you go from there? You can go over here and familiar file new project. And depending on the language you choose, Visual Basic or C#, you have an option of going to Smart Device, and there's Smart Device Project. The compact framework that you want to target is 3.5 because it's going to have compatible features for you that you're used to in the desktop or the web version of 3.5. You're just going to have your link and have all your language enhancements that you're used to today on your daily development. All right, so I'm going to talk a little bit about what .NET compact framework is. If the name implies itself, it's actually a subset of your current .NET framework. So you're going to have your link. You can have all of your language enhancements that you're used to today.
What's the footprint like?
The footprint is actually about, depending on the version, it's going to be anywhere from 1 to 3 megabytes.
That's not bad.
That's not bad at all. And the devices nowadays, the memory keeps increasing. So that's not even an issue. And with 6.5, it's going to come in pre-installed anyways. So a lot of these phones already have it installed with carriers. There's also something called SQL Compact, which is only 1.2 megabytes, which is comparable to SQL Express on your desktop, which allows you to store databases and familiar data types. So everything you know today about developing for desktop, and you can, with a little bit of adjustment, what you do on the web, you can actually get in here and start developing applications. Let me show you this. So we're going to pick 3.5, name your project, add the source control, the usual Visual Studio necessity. So here's an important part. Here's where you pick your target platform. So Windows Mobile Marketplace, the one I talked about, what you want to care about. This is going to be 6.0 and 6.1 and everything up from that. So you definitely want to do professional or standard. The pause right here. Professional or standard, the difference there is that professional SKU of Windows Mobile is the one that comes with touchscreen. It's usually a feature phone, so the newer ones are going to come with all the accelerometers. The cameras are going to be a little more powerful. And the standard is the non-touchscreen phone. This is more of a information worker device that's going to have a keyboard and a screen that's more of a simpler version of the device, but it's still a good resident on in our Windows Marketplace arena. So you pick your target platform, you pick your framework version, and here's where you get to pick your project type. So we're going to go ahead and write in that device application here. So when you put this up, what you're actually going to see on the screen is kind of how it looks like, how it's going to look like on the phone. You get access to maybe start writing your menu. And this is very, if you've ever written Windows desktop applications, this is very familiar for you. I mean, this is you got the toolkit, you can bring your buttons, you got all the tools for aligning your buttons correctly, and you get your date pickers. So there's more than a few controls that you can play with. So also the first few things that I definitely want to show everybody is when you're on this form, clicking on properties, this X does not mean the application actually is closed. That's actually a minimize button in Windows Mobile. So there's actually an option on your form object that you want to make sure to set to false, and that will change it to OK, so you'll see that. So that's the first one you want to make sure, because once you deploy the application first time to your device, when you're gonna click X, you're gonna think the application is actually closed. You're gonna hit deploy again and get an error. The error is gonna be that I can't write, and it will take you a little bit to figure out why. It's because it's still running in the background. So you want to be aware of that.
Yeah, we have a question over there.
So are you saying that the device emulator replicates the I/O error that would actually happen on the device trying to run the app and deploy at the same time?
Yes, yeah, the emulator would actually, it doesn't matter if you're trying to deploy to your emulator or the real device, you can have the exact same errors, exact same behavior as you would expect. So if you're trying to deploy to an application that's already running, you can't copy over a file that's actually running in memory right now.
That's great.
Yeah, life is good with this. I'm telling you, this is the way to do development for these mobile devices.
Yep.
So go ahead and continue on. Tell us what else you got here.
So another thing that you definitely want to do when you're setting up your project is you want to go to its properties. You go to the application tab, and there's the assembly information. So this is what you want to do to make sure you start taking ownership of your application. You want to put in your company, put in your product,
not the default
put in
one.
The copyright. Put in the version number of your application and a few more settings. So there's definitely a lot more you can go in here and modify also on the project. And if you ever need to change your target platforms, things like that, you can definitely do that off the project setup menu. So I'm going to do another cooking show analogy, and I'm actually going to switch over to an application that I've put some controls together. As you can see here, I used SQL Compact to actually put a database here in this project, and I'm filling in some databases, and I got a list here. So how are we actually going to see this on the device? So let's go ahead and actually see what our options are for connecting devices. When you first have Visual Studio installed, you're only going to have a few choices. You're going to have 6.0 and 5 and standard professional maybe.
That's all was out when it
That's all was out when it was shipped. So when you install 6 and 6.1 SDKs, you're going to see all the choices for all the screen resolutions, square, not square, and standard, and there's also some regular ones as well. So you can pick a classic emulator. By the way, if you approach the word classic means that's not a phone device, that's a PDA device. You're going to see less and less of those, but in certain markets, it's still relevant. You also get to pick a device.
I see several 6.5 ones there too.
Yep. Yep. So you can see a device. So let's go ahead and actually I'm gonna deploy this, and I'm gonna start without debugging. And before you get to do that, I ask you where you want to deploy. I mean, you can pick the setting. So you can either pick a device or an emulator. So I'm going to pick 6.5 professional emulator here, and I hit deploy. The first time you do this, and I already had this warmed up in the interest of time, is that when it would run your emulator, which looks like a phone look, and you can operate and work with it any way you can with the developer tools here. You can do anything from draining the battery, which you can actually intercept in your application, is check what's my battery level. Is my battery level running low? And if I have it running low, maybe my application should persist the data to my maybe SQL Compact database, or should go ahead and notify the user that maybe you should stop running this and get everything closed up because you're running out of battery. You can also detect if I'm connected to the internet. I can also maybe go to Bluetooth, go to camera. There's a lot of things you can do with the framework and Windows Mobile here. So as you can see here, I can interact with my application and see how this looks. So this is us looking at 6.1 device. So I wonder how my application is going to act on Windows 6.5 device when those go to market, when I sell this application through my marketplace, correct? So I'm going to close this. And let's do exactly the same thing. But instead of deploying to 6.1, we're going to deploy to 6.5 VGA emulator.
This is wicked cool, as they say up in New England, just to let you know.
So this is 6.5, and as you can see, this is actually a VGA device. This is going to be, most of the 6.5 devices will actually be coming with VGA resolutions for you. So, see this loading, see the new loading cursor here. So this is how this application looks like on the new OS here, with almost double the resolution. Do you see there are pick lists? It's actually become finger friendly. Flick friendly.
Support gestures then?
Yeah, support some of the gestures. So, but as you can see, still a lot of the controls still remain looking the way they do. This is actually because we're still using the .NET Compact framework, which is what actually draws these controls on the screen. So as you see, you know, our grid didn't get the flick, but you can see that some of the controls look different. But the cool feature, the cool fact here is that you're testing the way your application would behave on a device that's not even out, that you can't purchase an OS that don't have upgrades yet to some of the 6.1 devices. Mm-hmm. So what do you think about that, Russ?
I love it. How about y'all? Pretty cool?
Wow, that is awesome. So let's say, how many of you are interested now in actually participating? Now that Windows Mobile has a marketplace, and there's new devices shipping out, devices that look like that, there's already 30 million 6 and 6.1 devices that will get the side download for this. How many of you would be interested in going home and maybe exploring some of these SDKs? There's tons of samples, tons of videos.
That's good.
There's a how-to and use just about everything from Bluetooth to RDA.
A huge marketplace, that's for sure. Yeah, question in the back.
The new marketplace, is Microsoft going to charge a fee like Apple charges 30%? Do you know?
Definitely. Okay. So let me tell you a little more about details, and that's what we know right now that's been officially announced. Until the end of the year, you have a $99 sign-up, which will give you a certification up to 5 applications. So the reason why actually you want to get the emulators and the SDK is that you want to test to make sure your application works ahead of time. And then you're going to submit your application for testing to Microsoft, and you're going to get 5 for $100 this year, and then after that it's $100 per application to certify. What that's going to make sure is that when user gets this new phone, it's going to have this button right here, Marketplace.
And what you want to make sure is that the phone that I have, either it's wired VGA, it's VGA, or it's a standard version, a non-standard version, only shows the applications that will work with my device. So you definitely want to make sure that your device there. And that's what Microsoft will do for you for that admission fee. Also, so when you're selling an application, how would you, what's the breakdown? So they, Microsoft announced a competitive breakdown with 70-30. You get to keep 70%. Microsoft keeps 30%, and that goes between Microsoft and the carrier where they negotiate how you get the download and some of the certifications. So you get to keep, keep 70% of the, application, earnings.
Not bad for some of the tools you already know how to use, pretty much. I think that's a great demo. How about you? Round of applause for Nikita. Thank you very much, man. That was great.
Thank you.
All right, so our next topic here tonight, are you tired of writing wire-up code based on the events in WPF and Silverlight, like storyboard 1.begin on a mouse click event?
I am.
You are. I know you are.
I think you are too, aren't you?
Absolutely, man. I'm telling you. You know, it's just like when, Bill, when VB, you know, first came out, you had all these third-party controls, right? And it made it a lot easier to go ahead and write applications by just dragging and dropping these controls, setting a few properties. It's kind of an analogy what we're going to be talking about here with something called behaviors. Before we get to that, I got Bill Reese with me. He's our Silverlight MVP based out of Tampa, Florida. All right, that's it. And he's got a book coming out, Hello Silverlight 3, coming soon from Manning Publications. It's manning.com/Reese. His blog is there. He's an independent consultant as well with Blue Rose Systems. And he's up on Twitter. He's got some open source projects. He used to be a former XNA MVP as well. Yes. So he's got some gaming, a lot of great gaming experience and gaming content. So presentations he's done over at GameFest 2008, and again, you always see Bill involved in the community helping out. So once again, a big round of applause and welcome for Mr. Bill Reese.
Okay, so like we were talking about a little bit earlier, there's some new features in Blend, and I guess you talked about one of these new features before in one of your other episodes, right?
That's right, Sketchflow. Yep.
Sketchflow. So Sketchflow is probably the one that got the most publicity about what's new in Blend, but I think behaviors is just as important and just as exciting as Sketchflow is, actually. Mm-hmm. Behaviors let you write less code to attach functionality to your elements. So if instead of writing that code behind that you write before, say, handle this click event and go ahead and do something, you could just wire up this event in Blend, and it'll do it for you, and you won't have to write any code behind for it. So
No code. That's a good thing.
Now you can write your own behaviors, and then you're writing code
for
the behaviors, but then other people can use them easily. So.
Yeah.
So in order to use these behaviors, you're going to have to have the Blend 3 SDK installed on your machine. You don't necessarily have to have Blend installed. You need to if you want to use Blend to set up your behaviors, but if someone else created an application using behaviors in Blend, you could actually edit it in Visual Studio and compile it and everything else as long as you have the Blend 3 SDK installed. And that's a free download, and it's available now because they released Expression Blend 3 today. So we're pretty excited about that. And so you'll be able to, on your developer machine, if you don't have Blend on there, you'll still be able to run programs that use behaviors. So I'm running Blend 3 release here. I just downloaded it today and installed it. So we're ready to go on the latest release stuff here. And what I'm going to do is create a new Silverlight project. I'll create a Silverlight 3 application plus website. These behaviors will also work in WPF. So you can use them in your WPF projects as well, and they behave exactly the same. And what I'm going to do first is I'm going to bring out a couple of controls. So I'll bring out a button.
Out of curiosity, people here have done Silverlight applications, written Silverlight apps? A few of you have?
It's actually becoming a pretty good market for Silverlight development right now. It's a hot market, so definitely take a look at it. Okay, and I want to drag a text block out. So now I just have a couple of simple controls, a button and a text block. And what I'm going to do is go to this new section called Behaviors. And in our Behavior section, we have all these behaviors that we can attach to a XAML element. So I have 17 behaviors installed on here. 8 of those come with Blend right now, and then the other ones were installed separately from some community code, and we'll see that in a little bit. Okay, and as we see at the bottom of the behaviors list here, we also have the option of looking for other behaviors at the expression gallery. So we'll go to this expression gallery is for the community to submit their own behaviors and other related components that can be used inside expression. So we'll go to the behavior section, and you can see ones out here like make lowercase, docking behaviors, there's drag and drop, some other behaviors from Sean Wildermuth, and some other good behaviors here. Now this just started recently, so there's not that many out here yet, but I expect this to grow quickly and to be some really cool behaviors out there for you to use. So let's go ahead and let's start using behaviors in our application. So I'm going to go out and I'm going to drag the change property behavior onto the button. And then we get, it shows up in our visual tree here as a child of the button. And we get these properties here associated with it. Now these properties are going to be different depending on what type of behavior that you're using. And you can specify what properties are associated with the behaviors that you create. So we're going to first go ahead and pick a target for this. Now, this is a new little feature in Blend that if I go and click on this target to the side, and then I click on an element, it's actually going to be able to go ahead and just populate that box for me. So the other thing it does there is it names that element for you. So because it needs to be named to be part of a behavior. So it goes ahead and does that for you. Now I can say, and this is going to be on the click event of the button that this behavior is going to trigger. And what we're going to do is change the text property.
You've got the event handler click. You've got the properties that come up, and you just got to fill in the property with whatever it is that you want to do here.
Right. So whoever created the behavior actually wrote that code behind, and
that's
we
right.
get to call it without actually writing any code. So I'm going to set the text property, and I'll set it to clicked. And now we can go ahead and run this. And here we have our button and our text block, and when I click, you see that the property is updated. So this is with no code written. This is so a designer could go in and actually use this behavior and enhance the properties and the functionality of a XAML element. If we look at the XAML for this, we see that we have this new IEventTrigger property that is being set in here. And we have the target name, the property name, and the value. So this is really all that's added to the XAML itself in order to actually implement this behavior. So it's pretty straightforward, and you could actually write the XAML for this yourself if you wanted to. And so let's take a look at some more interesting behavior. There's a Silverlight MVP named Andy Beaulieu, and he's really into the Farseer physics engine for Silverlight. I was involved early on in the Farseer physics engine getting it ported to Silverlight from XNA, and he's actually really run with it, and he's actually implemented some really cool stuff here. So he's released some new behaviors for physics that actually can be used inside Blend. So the source code and binaries are available at physicshelper.codeplex.com. And so what we're going to do is go back to our design window, and we're going to use some of these physics behaviors that I have installed. First thing we need to do is go to the layout root, and that's currently a grid. And for the physics behaviors to work, we need to change it to a canvas. And then what I need to do is add a physics controller behavior to the canvas. And what this has is information like the gravity values and some of the other values, friction and things like that. So I'm going to change the gravity to 100. You can set this to any value you want and play with it till you have the gravity that feels right for what you're doing. And so the next thing I'm going to do is I'm going to actually attach another behavior to this button. And I'm going to attach the physics object behavior to it. And now what this is going to do is that this is going to make this button be a physics object. So there's going to be physics properties associated with this button. And then I'm going to do the same thing with text block. And the text block is actually, I'm going to make that static. And what static is going to do is make it so that it's not affected by gravity. It's kind of stuck in place. It's kind of like a shelf or whatever. Mm-hmm. Okay. And so now that we have those behaviors in place, let's go ahead and run this. Now this is, you know, great for a line of business application, right? You definitely want your button. You know.
That's great.
You know, this is what everybody wants.
This
they
looks
want
like
their,
April Fool's joke.
They want
to
their
me
button
that
to fall
like.
Down, right? Now, there's something wrong with my program.
My button keeps falling off.
Now the thing is also we have two behaviors on this button actually. We still have the change property behavior on there. So if we go ahead and refresh that, if we click fast enough, we can actually still get the other behavior to execute. So it's a little hard to click the button, but it's still there.
So you have multiple behaviors per object then.
Right. Exactly. Yep. So that's pretty cool for the physics behaviors. And like I said, these are available on CodePlex. Now, Peter Blois, who's on the Blend team, he has a pretty interesting sample as well that he's created as a behavior. And what he did is he likes, if on his blog here, it says that what he likes to do is make the interfaces explode. This is a hobby of his for some reason. I'm not sure why. But you know, if you ever want your data grid to just like shard into a million pieces, then this might be the behavior you want. So we'll click on something here.
Ooh.
And what this behavior is actually doing is it's using the perspective transform that's built into Silverlight 3 now to actually do a 3D distortion of all the elements. And if I hit reset, then they actually come back together and
oh,
you can.
Oh man, that's great.
And so this is an image, and this is a data grid, and this is another image, and no matter what these elements are, these behaviors can be attached to anything. So it's really a great sample of, not a very practical sample, but a great sample of what you can do with behaviors. So we're really excited about, you really have to think in a different way, though, about programming these, because when you're writing your applications, you need to think about what could be a behavior. Does it make sense for something to be a behavior? And you really need to think in a different way about how you code it. But if you do and you write your code that way, then you can really make your stuff more reusable. You can make it reusable in different situations that you may not have thought of originally and actually implement a model view type interface. Model view seems to be the buzzwords these days. So separating your view logic from your model logic, and this will help you get there.
I think the light bulb that goes off is whenever you're thinking, I got to write an event handler, and you think of this, right? You go and take this approach, and who knows? Maybe there's already something out there, right, that does what you want it to do, and it's just drag and drop at that point. And then I would imagine there's going to probably be a pretty big, third-party market for writing these as well, just as there was with the third-party controls, right?
Yeah, I definitely think that's the case, and I also think that if you're working with a designer, then this can be really useful because you can write the code in a way that the designers can implement, so and just bring into the project.
That's awesome, Bill. Give it up for Bill Reese. Silverlight MVP. All right, so next up, we've got the community update by Mr. Keith Kabza, and he's the MVP in Office Communication Server Deployment. That's a long MVP title there, Keith. He's got a great blog as well as a website at gotuc.net. I think you're going to show that in a minute, as well as you are what position in your company?
I'm the CTO for my company. We're a Microsoft Gold Partner in Tampa. We specialize in custom application development and unified communications.
And the name of the company is?
Visual Gov Solutions.
All right, very good. So why don't we bring up...
Real quick, I'm going to say, since we're talking about tools and stuff today, we do have... I host a website called gotuc.net. For anyone that doesn't know what unified communications is or ever heard of Office Communication Server, it's basically Microsoft's product for doing instant messaging, live meeting. I can also do telephony now, so we have voice IP in the office, so we kind of integrate the phone and telephone with the PC. And you can also build your own applications on this platform as well, using Visual Studio and Windows Workflow and all the tools that are available in Visual Studio. If you go to gotuc.net, you can sign up for an account for, we have something called the Sandbox, where you can get an account online, And you can actually use Office Communicator, which is the instant messaging client. It's also federated with Microsoft, so you can actually log on and talk to anybody inside Microsoft, ask your questions. You can also build your applications on there. We also give you a mailbox with Exchange 2010. So if you want to check that out, you can see that again. Just go to the website and sign up for the sandbox. And all the we also have a lot of samples and blog posts about developing things like instant messaging bots and applications with the new Exchange SDKs and stuff that are out there.
All right.
But we're going to do the community update here just to give you a couple of places to go and look for information about where to find things about user groups and the tools and the things that are available, such as the Channel 9 TV stuff here we're talking about on Toolshed. So all these videos and stuff that rusted today are available for download. Here's a list of the Toolshed tips. So if you only want to watch a certain section of the video, you don't want to watch the whole thing, maybe you didn't like Stan's presentation and want to see Bill's, yeah, you can just jump right ahead and you can jump to a specific spot in the video. Some upcoming conferences and MSDN events nationwide. This is for everybody, not just Florida. You can go to msdevents.com. We have some new Tiki Huts that are scheduled for Windows 7 and Expression 3. These are mainly in Florida here. We got the next one coming up on September 15th. Tampa will be September 17th.
And Mr. Joe Healy and myself will be
Joe Healy and Rush, yes, yep, doing the presentation. MSDN events up and down the East Coast. So if you're not from Florida, you want to travel around the state here, we got a bunch of events coming up all the way from Pennsylvania to Maryland, North Carolina. Again, all these are available online for registrations. TechNet events coming up down the East Coast. Again, we got some migrating XP to Windows 7. That's going to be a hot topic for a lot of companies who want information on that.
Yeah, so the way that's going to work, all those two blog post entries I put, pretty much the developer events will be in the afternoon. The TechNets will be in the same venue, same location in the morning, so you can plan on a whole day if you want
to. Right, it's a whole day event.
Yep.
SQL Saturday is coming up here. We got August 1st coming up here in Baton Rouge. One in South Florida on August 8th is the first one in Florida. I went a trip to PDC on Ineta, so if you guys want to go to PDC out in Los Angeles, this is the premier developer event, so make sure you check out the website and sign up for that. Bytes on MSDN, so we got a bunch of well-known speakers on here. You can find information. This is a new section on MSDN. You get all the latest, greatest stuff from the influentials at Microsoft.
Yeah, Scott Hanselman, Billy Hollis, all great presenters, these guys.
Again, the Wind Mobile Dev Camp, this is something that's coming up. Austin, London, New York, San Francisco. This is going to cover all the new features and stuff on Windows Mobile 6.5 and the OS. First one's in Seattle, so it's a little bit trip from here, but that's on August 19th.
All right, yeah, we have one in Tampa as well, yeah.
Thrive, this is a new website. So if you guys are looking for jobs or want to improve your position in your career, this is a new site that Microsoft has. You might want to take advantage of it. Check out some of the features up there. You get some free training and do some things to advance your career. This is a brand new site they put out there.
Yeah, it's really in response to these tough economic times, right, that we're going through. So that's really kind of the gist of this particular site. So,
The Connected Show over at connectedshow.com.
That's with Peter Lodotti, one of my teammates, and Dimitri have gotten together and do kind of a show about interoperability with other platforms and a Microsoft platform. So a good show to connect in on, no pun intended, okay?
The MSDN ramp up, so this goes over discounts, MS Press, and training kit. So if you're looking to get some extra training and you want to get some vouchers and stuff for training, check out that site. Again, where to find things that are happening. The order list is important, but one of the good sites up here, Community Megaphone, has a listing of all the things going on across the U.S. for developer communities, things like user group meetings and events like this. CodeZone.com is another one that I use a lot to post up our meetings and stuff, so if you're not aware of that, check that out. BizSpark, if you're not familiar with BizSpark, check that out. That's for if you want to start up a new company, an entrepreneur, you can get some stuff set up with BizSpark to get free licenses and stuff to start up your startup. It has to be a startup, and you have to be a legitimate business, but there's something great to take up. DreamSpark, this one's for students, fairly similar to BizSpark, but you have to fill me on that one, too. I'm not too familiar with this one here.
Yeah, it's just free software for students. That's
just for
it.
Students, yep. Same thing, yep. But
that's
free
it.
Software. So if you're a student, check that out. Florida Code Camp's coming up. We do have one coming up here real quick in August in Jacksonville. So I know there's a number of us going up there to speak and to attend that one. We have the one in Tallahassee in September. We got one in Naples, and I do have an announcement here for Tampa. We got ours tentatively set for November 7th for Tampa Code Camp. So check out the website, tampacodecamp.com. Next week, we'll probably start putting some of the information out there where the facility is going to be, call the speakers, and so forth.
That's awesome. And for everybody nationwide, if you're looking for a boondoggle, right, to come down to Florida, I mean, price of a flight and hotel room, you got a great day of education, free training by a ton of great presenters. A lot of the influentials in the industry come out to these, and it's always a great time. It's a great day.
And, of always, you got to check out Russ's website. We have Joe Healy's website. That's another good site. He has a great calendar on there. Keeps track of all the local developer events. Brian Johnson's site and Jeff Barnes as well for the TechNet events.
So, listen, I want to get all the presenters up here today. Come on up here. And thank you, Keith. Get a round of applause for Keith. And I tell you what, you have to know the code to get in the shed. Yeah, give everybody! Give it up for Nikita down here! Mr. Bill Reese! Keith Kanda! Last but not least, Mr. Stone Schulte! That's it! Thanks everybody for coming, much appreciated. See you over at the Green Iguana next. Thank you. All right, it's a wrap. Thanks, everybody. Yeah.
200 pin connectivity, 56K, just don't cut it no more. Want a big pipe carrying 200 megabits of pure excitement right to my door. Got an SUV with six-wheel drive. With 300 horses, I'm never deprived. Infrared sensors for climate control. Zero to warp speed and ready to roll. Cause I'm a toy boy out on the fringe. And he who dies with the most toys wins. Ooh. Gotta sell you the phone with 500 names. I call up my friends to play internet games. Digital blood without any pain. Gotta get enough points to finally land me a place in the online gamers hall of fame. 39 speakers in my living room. NASA complains about the sonic boom. 10-foot high screen, 20 feet wide. Strap it in tight, cause it's a long, sweet ride. And I'm a toy boy, a little to the right. These batteries should last all night. It's gonna take. Oh, take a lifetime running around in circles, reaching for the gold, reaching, reaching for the gold ring. What's gonna set you? Set you free. Got a two-seater sports coupe I can almost fit in. Stop by for some ice cream on way to the gym. My satellite dish, it's a damn sight to see. Got a transmitter banned by the FCC. Yes, I'm a toy boy life is hard. I pay my taxes with my credit card.